Steven. So are we going to call you Destiny Online or what? How we do this?
Steven is fine. It's okay.
Well, I can do Destiny. Yeah, what you prefer. I don't care.
in my more serious conversations, I usually go by Steven. Destiny's just the gamer name that I kind of had growing up. So.
All right. I don't want to diss you and get in trouble. All right. Yeah. This is, let me tell you the story. Here, let me get this the way it's supposed to be. Okay, now we can, well, since we got a pretty good shot of you there, what we can do is include the graphics. Let's go through them and see what we got here. Are you able to see these?
Yeah.
Okay, so we got, yeah, that was the Wired thing. I read the first couple of pages. I get it. Yeah, those are good. We can have those run for the first segment, and then we'll just go me and you, and that way they'll see whatever. All right.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, now this is the deal. Do you know a guy named Davi Barker?
I do not.
Okay, he's a listener of yours a lot, and he's a really fantastic graphic artist.
Okay.
And here, wait a minute. Let me go ahead and start the video. That's one thing my producer will tell you is in the breaks, you know, it's recorded and a lot of people, they go in, hey, that was the break. I go, hey, man, I record everything. So, don't be whining me later. You know, that's just the way it is. So, FYI, and you probably don't care. All right. The Davi Barker is a great graphic artist. He's an author. He has several books. He's, real artist that does great stuff. We work together on a lot of things. We have one of the things that we're working on a great deal, the letters that we write, letters of Captain Mark on PiratesWithoutBorders.com. PiratesWithoutBorders.com is really a philosophy of decentralization of everything. Well, Davi and I, I'm 58 and he's in his 30s. He's like in later 30s. And I'm a hardcore freaking anarchist, leave me alone, you're still voting, you're kind of thing, but involved in politics. I'm the one that created the Ron Paul Lovolution logo, and we really pushed that, and doing a lot of stuff. So it's, I'm heavily involved in philosophy, and yes, I'm that libertarian kind of thing. Davi is, I recognized he uses the Socratic method a lot, and he argued, and he'll piss people off sometimes, especially online. It's just a thing. And then, but we've been friends for a long time, over a decade. So then I get hearing you, and he was here working. We work like together for a couple of weeks, about three or four times a year, and we just head down plow, and my wife just, feeds us and gives us coffee. Man, we're just, we're at it. Take a little recreational break, watch a movie, boom. For 2 weeks, we just hard working. I really enjoy our collaboration and we get along really well into it, but he'll argue with and just really, I do okay, but some people, man, he just rubs the wrong way. I heard you debating on, it was some guy, it was a really good conversation. It was an hour or two and it was on predestiny or something like that, or predetermination and whatever. And it was just, and I go, I recognize that. That's where you're getting your technique from. That you guys are arguing. I'm going, okay. So it prompted a conversation between he and I for days. Okay. And I go, I want that guy on. Let's get that guy on. So that's why Donna has been trying to get you over the time. So I wake up this morning, see you on the schedule, and I go, when did you know this? It's like days ago. Well, you got to tell me. I need to prep. All right, fine, whatever. Let's do it. So this is going to be fun. I don't know where it's going to go or how much you're going to hate on me or whatever, but okay. I agreed with pretty much everything you said. What I'm trying, I'll pre-warn you, when I do these kinds of conversations, usually it's with like politicians or something. They're just, probably same way you get motivated, somebody you just want to get some. And I go, look, I'm going to ask three questions, all right? They're going to be the same question at different times. Why? When you go, you'll get in and I'll go, okay. Why? And you use kind of the same technique. You'll go, all right, where's your data for that? Kind of thing. Well, my thing is not so much data, because I don't believe a lot of data anyway, but I'm just going, what's the motivation? Why? So I think our techniques and what we do, one, I probably piss off less people, but That doesn't mean I no. Probably I'd probably piss off a lot of people. But you know, I mean, you know, in the interview. So I'm hoping that we can be friends and come back and later. And this will be awesome because I really enjoyed your show. I thought okay. It was really, you know, you really got down to it by. But there's a premise that I think is missing, and that'll come in the show. And it's just Freem's answer. What's the question? You'll go, yeah, prove it. You know. So anyway, so we'll see. But the so this is going to be fun. We start in about a minute and a half, and then. But the problem is we got breaks. And for this kind of conversation, you have breaks. It's just a pain in the ass. So what I'm probably going to do is I'm probably just going to have. There's a couple of pirate. Commercials that I want to make sure get it just, you know, you can even comment on them and then mm-hmm. We'll get right into it. So maybe there'll be a minute right after the break that we'll have, and then we'll go in to the break and we'll continue the conversation. Then we'll come right in with the rejoining of the music and so on. All right.
Yeah, no problem.
All right. So that's pretty much what the whole, while you're on and everything we're going to do, we're going to have some fun. And then you can tell me, but first off, we'll let these graphics run and you can tell me all about your channel and your experiences and all that, and we'll get into it. Okay.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, peace. Here we go.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us, but if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Unafeared here on Declare Your Independence, and me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAU, the studios of FreedomsPhoenix.com. Yeah, see, I told you to clear up. Yep, my voice there, colloidal silver spraying, doing, there's your evidence right there. Freaking work, man, I didn't get sick. On and on and on and on. All right, what we're going to do, Destiny is his online name on his channels and so on. His name's Stephen Bonnell II. What we're going to go ahead and do is I'm going to have him introduce himself. And in the first hour, I told you, you know, what was up and what we were doing. Destiny is one of the podcasts that Davi listens to, and when he's here visiting, that means I listen to it. So there was one conversation that was going, I just thought it was awesome, and it sparked a lot of conversation between he and I, and the basic thing comes down to, if you got enough data, you know what's going to happen, so you know, we get enough data and we can have policy changes and we can do different. I'm like, I don't know, can you get enough data to, you know, go against our free will? I mean, how, you know, so we're going to talk about that. But first thing I wanted to, you know, he's been written up in Wired magazine. They had a kind of big freaking article on it. Can this notorious troll turn people away from extremism? Which kind of his tactic is going after someone that has some extreme view and they say this or that, and he'll go, yeah, well, show me your freaking case study of whatever. So it's an interesting conversation. I want to add to it a little bit. Hopefully we'll make a new friend. And he's definitely got skills, but he's a gamer. He's like out there playing games and doing this. He's got hundreds of thousands of followers doing it. So let me introduce you to Stephen Bonnell. Am I saying that right, Stephen Bonnell?
Yeah, close enough. Stephen Bonnell, yeah.
Well, it's your name, man. Tell me what it is. Crap, you know?
I've heard it pronounced so many different ways. I don't even remember at this point what the original pronunciation
is. There you go. All right. So we'll call him Stephen Bonnell. Well, Stephen, go ahead and tell us how you got started in this, about your channel, what you do, and you know, introduce yourself to the audience for me.
Yeah, so about 10 years ago, I started up on a couple live streaming platforms under the name Destiny, where I played, I guess you could say, StarCraft kind of professionally, a really old game. I streamed games for a long time. We always talked about stuff like politics and philosophy as part of the stream. And then around 2016, that became a more like mainstay part of my content. And then we started to do politics way more in 2016. And then up till today, I'd say that's probably what I'm most known for now.
Okay. For me, I would think that's a skill right there, to be into a video game playing it while giving political commentary. That's like a rarefied number of people to begin with. So I'm just going, how does that affect your ability to, you know, spine, killed, you know, slash, gun. Oh, and, you know, the debate was, I mean, you know, I'm, that's amazing to me. What, how is it that you interject philosophy while you're playing a game?
I mean, there's always like modern day stuff going on. You know, a news story might come up that might have some relevance to some area in philosophy and psychology. It's not like we're, you know, going like super in depth on any of these things. Usually it's just me sharing my thoughts, going back and forth with chat. And then it's not that hard to do it while you're playing if you've played a game like a million times.
Yeah.
You know, it seems impressive to watch the screen with a thousand things going on and I'm still talking to chat. A lot of people don't know how I can do that. But, you know, walking and talking requires the coordination of, you know, dozens of different groups of muscles as well. But we do it so much, we don't really think about it either. So, yeah, I think most people could do it, assuming you've played a game enough.
I am, I don't know. I find that distracting, you know, a lot of this stuff. Like here, I even check an email and I lose my total, you know, freaking line of whatever, you know. So doing that. But I tell you one thing it might do. It kind of gets down to what's on the top of your mind. You're not got a mask up or, you know, being in defensive mode or whatever, that you're actually, you know, whatever's, you know, coming to, you know, it's more like a Warshak test of I'm playing a video game. Do you think that might have something to do with, you know, the level of which you're spouting stuff off, you know, or do you've thought deeply about it before and you got rhetoric that you're doing while you're playing? And do you still play a lot or do you mostly talk now?
I definitely still play a lot. I mean, I still get attacked at everything while talking. Like there's a back and forth dialogue with chat, but I mean, a lot of this is repeated stuff, you know, like usually people will ask a question. Usually it's a question that's been asked before. So I'm usually ready to respond to whatever is being asked. And I usually have like a list of responses based on where the conversation goes, just because the conversation has happened so many times.
Oh, so it's the same. Well, somebody, how do you pick someone? Do you pick someone on Twitch that's just there and you, all right, let's talk about it? Or are you just doing it yourself? Or are you looking to debate somebody that's come in and try and challenge it?
I mean, it depends. There are so many different ways that we get into certain conversations on stream. Sometimes somebody in my chat will say something and they'll have a very strong opinion that we disagree with. And eventually they'll come on and we'll chat. Sometimes, you know, back and forth on Twitter with another content creator or back and forth with YouTube videos with somebody else. And then they'll come on and chat. Basically, the way that I like to resolve most issues is through like a live conversation so that we can just hash everything out right there. We don't have to prepare responses, blah, blah, blah. I can figure out what the other person thinks very quickly. So mostly in my career, I would say things very quickly kind of get to this online discussion. That seems to be the natural direction that most things head. There's a lot of different ways to get there.
All right. Is there a reason why you chose the name Destiny?
I was like 12. I don't even know. I had a lot of random names growing up. It just sounded cool as a kid. I wish there was like a better, like, I wish this was like a indicative of like some internal belief I have, or there was like a cooler way to get it. But honestly, I was young. I picked a name that I thought sounded cool. And
well, see, that's a lot to do with it right there. Cause it sounded cool to you. I mean, you know, the fact that it sounded cool was, you know, had, because I thought it was an appropriate name for the discussion. The first one that I, you know, heard with you having, it's kind of, you know, this preordained destiny versus not, or can, or I'm going, okay, I guess that, you know, kind of applies. And I'm, you know, I like unique names. My children have unique names, and it has an impact on them. You know, like mm-hmm. My sons are named Corsair and Forrest, you know. So Corsair, nobody has that name. He used to complain about it. Now he names his son Corsair. So I'm like, oh, okay, so it wasn't that bad, you know. So, I, okay. You know, it's so I think these names have, you know, impact. And the fact that you thought it was cool. So that goes back to where what you were talking about is that, you know, with enough information, the one that got my interest mm-hmm. is with enough information, we can determine policy. And I wanted to know policy, what that meant. And when we get into the next, we got like a minute here going into this, and we'll get into the next hour, we'll get into it. But when you say, I just want to make sure we're using the same word, same definition thing, so we don't talk past each other. When you say policy, what do you mean by that?
I mean, it could be any policy. It could be the policy that a teacher uses in their classroom to determine the best way to teach students. It could be obviously a government policy, maybe how we should administer healthcare. It could be a policy in your personal life, maybe a way that you deal with friends and family. I mean, any of these things. Policy, I just mean to be like a prescription, like a way that you ought to do things or a way you should do things.
And that, you know, and I'm with you, but then it gets into with a gun. You know what I mean? With a shiny badge and a law or something? I mean, what's your political philosophy when it comes to, like, government or governance, or should they even be any? Where are you at on that?
That's a really big question. Basically, I think that...
We're going to the break in 20 seconds. I wanted to get the big question.
Sure.
And then everybody on the edge of their seat, and here we go. All right? So, in 30 seconds, it'll, you know, be... Well, I tell you what, we got enough time for you to tell people where to go to listen to you and pimp your show. Go.
You can find me at twitch.tv/destiny if that's where you're looking for me at.
Twitch. And why Twitch?
That's the site I stream at.
But I mean, you chose Twitch because it promotes everything you wanted to do in the game and everything?
I mean, I've been here for like 10 years.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Feeling confused about the current economic reports that dominate the headlines?
Okay. What I want to do is that right there. That's a big question, the philosophical where and what's your goal. A lot of times, a lot of things make more sense if I know what your goal is. You know,
okay, sure.
You know why you did something. Well, you can tell me now. We're going to, because I don't want people waiting in the break. They're all freaking on the edge of their seat. But when we come back, we'll get into your philosophy and so on. But what's your goal? You're like, it seems like you're driven to do something.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the existence of government makes everybody's lives demonstrably better, and that there are functions that the government has that can make everybody's lives better, and we ought to champion said functions or increase said functions, yeah.
Okay, we're not friends anymore. But, you know... and this would be a really good discussion. I mean, I could go right, I go, yeah, and... Where's your data on that? I got like hundreds of millions of people dead from their own government, you know, to say that probably doesn't work. You know, so I mean, where's your stats on that one?
Sure. Are you asking me now? Or are you?
Yeah,
or
that, you know,
oh. Well, I mean, there's a couple of problems with that. I mean, one, just because a lot of people have been killed by government doesn't mean that people would have necessarily survived without said government.
No! Okay, we'll save it.
I mean,
that,
so the counterfactual doesn't really work, and then
save it. You're killing me
okay,
already.
Sure.
You know, this is, see, that was the one thing when Davi and I were talking about is when you said policy. There needs to be a policy. I'm going, absolutely, when you say between people, whatever. And I'm going, okay. The only question that nobody ever asked him, and I haven't heard, and I need to know, does that mean with force and a gun? Is there a law? Are we going to have, this is our policy, so saith the destiny or the majority or what? You know, that's what I need to know. So, yeah, you're kind of, yeah, government has its place to do different, and we can have that discussion. Hell, I do all the, so this is, you know, because I go like this to Davi a lot of times, and I'll say, these different things that are happening and the, you know, this millennial, I'm 58 and I got like, I don't know, I guess millennial kids or something, but you know, I'm going, where is the disconnect? There's something going on. Who are they talking to? Who is MSNBC and CNN and Fox, all the, who are they talking to? And then when I did, I go, yeah, it's you. You know, this is, you know, they call it triggering or get impact from or support or whatever. And I'm going, who is it? Those that believe in government, that government should be crafted in such a way to do something. And I'm going, okay. And that's why this show is called Declare Your Independence. The whole reason was, is when I was young, 28 or so, and I, you know, in the late 80s, I got, I don't know, awoken or something, my father's company and international trade, and I got involved in pie, had my fourth kid, and I'd taken serious and watching news, and I just felt like I was lied to all the time. And I'm going, what the hell is really going on? And then I, you know, went deep dive into it and, okay, I get it. You guys are a bunch of sociopathic scumbags. So I'm going, okay. So the thing is I'm looking for Of course, there's going to be a better way or not, but under what circumstance? Well, the show is Declare Your Independence. It's because the Declaration of Independence said the only purpose of government is defense of individual rights. When it doesn't do that, it's time to alter, abolish. It's your right. It's your duty. And I go, sign me up. Because I go, by any stat, I go, all right, the proper role of government is, and how are they doing? Not so great. And I'm going, okay, why? I mean, is there something that we could do? That's what we can discuss. You believe there can be, and then that's where it's going to go, and we're going to have interesting conversation. All right, we're coming back in a few seconds. Here we go.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
The whole world addicted to the drama, only attracted to things that bring the trauma. Overseas, yeah, we trying to stop terrorism, but we still got terrorists here living in the USA, the big CIA, the Bloods and the Crips and the KKK. But if you only have love for your own race, then you only leave space to discriminate, and to discriminate only generates hate. And when you hate, then you're bound to get irate. Yeah, madness is what you demonstrate, and that's exactly how anger works and operates. Man, you gotta have love just to set it straight. Take control of your mind and meditate. Let your soul gravitate to the love, y'all.
People killing, people dying, children hurting, you hear them crying. Can you practice what you preach? And would you turn the other cheek? Father, 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 help us. Send some guidance from above. These people got me questioning.
On Declare Your Independence, where's love? I love that song. I think it's a really appropriate for this conversation that we're having with Destiny. You know, I wanted to, you know, and this is the one thing, you know, I'll prep you guys in the break and so on, what we're going to be talking about. During the whole conversation that he was having with a lot of the people and so on, is with enough information, you could have good policy. You know, and I'm going, yeah. And I'm thinking that that information, you know, throughout history comes down to freedom's the answer. What's the freaking question? Okay. I just, you know, I you know, more freedom, more options, more leave me aloneisms. The whole point of government, Declaration of Independence, why this show is Declare Your Independence, is the purpose of government is the defense of individual rights. That is the best. And I tell you, Destiny, this is what happened, or Stephen. When I went to Arizona State University and I took philosophy 101 or whatever it was, and they had deontology, which is kind of a rights-based, you know, everybody has to have whatever, and then a what they called rule utilitarianism, a utilitarian view, you know, kind of the Spock thing, you know, the most benefit from the most people and give up the individual kind of deal. And I made the argument that I thought it was the best overall for everybody, the best utilitarian argument was the support of individual rights. That is what made everything better for everybody, was that single kernel of individual rights being protected made it better for everybody. D. And I'm like, what the heck was that? It was a student teacher or whatever, a teacher's assistant, whatever, did the grade and kind of, yeah, D, because you, the wrong answer. And it wasn't how you made the argument. It wasn't, you know, the formatting. What it was, they didn't agree with it. And that just took the bloom off the rose for me for college education. From that point on, I'm like, it's just more indoctrination of crap from high school. I mean, here we go. And this is like 1980. So I'm going, okay. And that's what I felt when listening and, you know, talking with you, that there was, nope, wrong answer. There is a group response that we need to find the right policy and then enact it. Go.
I'm not sure what part of that I'm supposed to respond to.
You're flat. You agree with Freem's answer? What's the question? Individual rights? We got to have government force? What?
Sure. So in so far as individual rights go, I guess like my question at the end of the day is, I guess I kind of do, like you said, similar to what you do. My real question is, well, what is it that you're actually after? You know, people say that they value individual rights in and of themselves. I don't think that's true. I think what we value is some sort of a more fundamental concept, maybe like how happy we are or how much happiness we can pursue in our lives.
Well, poof, you're the village idiot and you're happiest.
Sure. Yeah, sure. So I think some people think that individual rights is the way that we can best pursue that. Other people, like me, would argue that, you know, an institution of government can protect the rights of the people and provide more opportunities for people to pursue said opportunities or said happiness in a better way. So, for instance, like we might say that everybody has the individual right to start a business, but if one guy in society has almost all of the money and no one else does, well, you know, how much is that right worth if it's only on paper and in an effective sense, nobody can really start a business, you know? So that would be where I would say, well, this is a good place for government to step in to provide more effective rights to people, because individual rights listed on a piece of paper don't really matter much if you don't have the opportunity to pursue any of them in the real world.
All right. I'm gonna do you a favor in the audience and let you express, you know, everything you do, because, you know, when you're talking, I'm like, ooh, I got a whole bunch of things to slice up in there. Same thing you do. You know, I'm going to try to be nice here. When you have a business opportunity or something, this is the problem that, you know, say most libertarians, I'm sure you're always going at it with, and yes, I'm that libertarian. So, what happens when you have an opportunity to do a business? We talk to people in like Cuba, they're starting to open up their businesses and people can buy, and you can start your own business and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about, yeah, but, you know, we got to have somebody control how many barbers there are within a certain amount of space. You can't have competing, but we don't have that, because then you like compete and you'll have less and, you know, whatever. Because it's not about the individual. It's not about consumer service. It's not about competition. It's not about. And whenever you do, you have some business, some guy gets a whole bunch of money. I'm like, right on, unless it's an artificial monopoly. All of a sudden, they're protecting the big business. Amazon can do drone delivery, but nobody else can, you know? Or, you know, Boeing can make, you know, space capsules to the ISS, but nobody else can, because they got to kind of, and then Elon comes in and goes, whoa, what the hell? And you got to buy Russian engines? And you got to, I can do it, damn it, you know? We hate when these guys do that. So for me, I'm always about, anybody can do anything as long as they're not violating someone else's individual rights, which means compete in the marketplace at the detriment of somebody that's already there. So what I hear you saying is that, well, we can't have all these people with a bunch of money. And you go, all right, well, if they're making a bunch of money, somebody wants to do the same thing for less or a better way. Or here they come, they do it. Yeah, but we need to kind of control who does and how. So I'm wondering, you know, when you say somebody has a bunch of money, is it from a monopoly created by government or even the corporation thing? Or what? I mean, why do you think they have a bunch of money?
I mean, people could have a bunch of money for a variety of reasons. I don't really care so much about the people that have a lot of money. I'm not one of those people that's going to come out and say, like, billionaires are evil or whatever. What I'm more concerned with is the people that don't have the money. So, for instance, Elon Musk had some really good ideas. He's arguably revolutionized the rocket industry and maybe even jump-started, you know, our drive towards electric automobiles. But the question is, how many other Elon Musks might be out there that just don't have the capital necessary to start a business? And that's really what the question comes down to for a lot of this. You know, it's really great that there are people that have a lot of money that, you know, can be philanthropic. They can donate money to causes, they can start businesses, they can donate to politicians, whatever you like to do with your money to have influence in the world. That's great. But the sad thing is that there might be a lot of really good ideas out there that we're just not getting, because the only barrier that a person might have to letting this idea loose in society is the initial capital necessary to starts that idea.
So there should be a universal basic capital idea income or something? I mean, what are you arguing for?
Well, I mean, I don't know if I would necessarily argue for that. I mean, I would argue that society should probably be structured in a way such that people have opportunities for things like education, housing, healthcare, so that there's not as many barriers in the way for a lot of people to get their ideas.
I'm for that. If it pleases the crown, can I occupy my own land? We have a situation to where you're free to camp out on the sidewalk, but you can take that same tent to land you own, and if you don't have permission slip from the crown, you're not allowed to go to jail. I'm like, whoa. When did that happen in America? So, yeah, I think we're... See, I all the arguments, everything that you would say, you'd look at a problem and you'd see that it needs to be solved, and I go, I'm with you in every way on a lot of the stuff, the arguments, but it just always came down and it wasn't made clear, okay, so how do you right the injustice? And to me, it sounds like you need more freedom. You know,
which injustice?
Pick one. I mean, you know, I don't care. You know, if there's some, this one person doesn't have enough opportunity, this doesn't have enough food, this guy doesn't have enough, you know, education, this guy doesn't have, you know, I mean, whatever it is, I'm going.
I mean, so like right now, if a homeless guy in Austin has unlimited freedom, but like, how does that help him? Right.
I don't know. What should we? I mean, what are you saying?
Well, I'm saying that like you can have all the freedom in the world and it doesn't really do much for you. I don't think freedom in and of itself is necessarily a good thing to have. You know, like if I'm standing at the edge of the cliff and I have the freedom to jump off, like is it good that I have that freedom? You know, or
absolutely.
Okay. I would argue that like there are probably more important things in life than freedom. You know, like let's say that I could let somebody make 100 decisions and one of them leads them down a good path and 99 of them are just objectively horrible in every size, shape, and measurable form. You know, it's probably good to just not have to make that decision. For instance, you know, should people really have to be making decisions that might jeopardize their health in a way that they can't access healthcare? You know, that's probably something that we shouldn't have to worry about. So government providing that as an institution would probably be beneficial for everybody involved, even if that means less.
You know, that's a really good one, is healthcare. I think you're absolutely on to something there that, well, for me, you know, freedom's answer was the question. I mean, in healthcare, what happens when you, you know, break your leg or you need brain surgery or something? I mean, you know what happens? You know, where's your institution's going to do that kind of thing? So I definitely have an answer. I mean, I can debate it. I think what we have is, it's more a difference of an opinion. And the opinion, I think we had, see, I'm a hardcore libertarian. I had shows on Air America, which was, mm-hmm. you know, lefty, whatever, Democrat, big time, token libertarian. And it would be, I can't believe you're on Air America. And I produced for Charles Goyette, another great libertarian on Air America. And it was really popular. And the one thing was, is we understood that we were going to a new field to plow. Because it's already, everybody considers libertarian kind of an offshoot of this conservative Republican thing or something, you know. Mm-hmm. And I go, hell yeah, we're going to the left. And explain to them, you know, why we have the same goals, just a different tactic. And we all want, you know, I think more so than the overlap between Republicans and libertarians is the overlap with the left. You know, we just want to be left alone. We want, you know, but gosh darn it, that includes my money, you know. So it was, I would make the argument of how much we had in common, and it really was scary to a lot of the left. They didn't like the fact that we could, you know, get through the cognitive dissonance and see that how much we did have in common. We just had a different opinion of how to get there. So that's, I'm sure that'll come up here. We'll start with the healthcare thing. I'll give a story of a friend and where freedom helped, and we can go from there, and we'll focus on, you know, right to healthcare or something, okay? I think that's important to you.
Or we can, yeah, get into the necessity of a state if you want to do that. I mean, that's a good place to start as well. But
yeah, okay, well, sure. Well, which one you want to do?
From the necessity of the state, I can build out most of my arguments, and if you can reject that, then all of my arguments kind of fall apart, right? So it's probably all a good place to start.
All right, let's do that. You know, do we need a state? You know, and to do what? All right, I'm hip to that. Let's do it. Sure. All right, here we come.
Calm. You can put the Liberty Radio Network on the air in your area. Visit broadcast.lrn.fm to learn how. Broadcast.lrn.fm.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
ROADS? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any ROADS.
Destiny, Stephen Bunnell II, a.k.a. Destiny, on twitch.tv/Destiny, D-E-S-T-I-N-Y. A lot of things where this can go, and I think we're, you know, getting down to the bud, you know, and it is, do we need a state, a government, over, you know, I don't know, what do you want to call it, a big brother, a daddy, a mm-hmm. mom, or something, you know, to fix this for us. So let's go ahead and we'll start right there. Stephen, yeah, you say the affirmative. Yes, we do.
Yeah, so at the very least, this is a question that I'm always interested in hearing an example or hearing a response to. So you have a collection of people that are all freedom-loving individuals. There's no pesky government, maybe not even a currency. Maybe these guys just barter. They've got relationships with each other. All of that, the wonderful ANCAP, libertarian, whatever society. Mm-hmm. Let's say to the south of them, there's a group of people that are of equal size and capability, you know, equal access to resource. What if these people collectively realize, hey, if we make a state, we can go and invade our brothers to the north, take over all their land. Since these guys aren't collectively, you know, organized under some, you know, single government, it would be pretty easy for us to just move in and take them over territory by territory without like a unified front or response to them. That's usually where I start, where I wonder, like, it seems like there's a necessity for a state at the very least to protect yourself from foreign intervention.
And the question to me is how do we defend against that or something?
Yeah, how do you get around that? Yeah.
You know, it would in the 90s, when I'd run for office and everything, you'd have reporters do the same thing. And they come in, they go, well, you know, how would you, what would you do with your Navy? I mean, what about the foreign threat of blah, blah, blah? And they list off a bunch of stuff. And I go, you know, if we look at it, what you see is what always happens is when you got a hammer, you're looking for a nail. And there's a threat. It's always the fear of coronavirus or you know, the bird flu or, you know, some, you know, Arab wearing a turban that's going to come kill us. And it's always fear that we operate from. And I'm going, what if I'm not afraid? That's why we start off, no fear, no fear, because it's always the mind killer. Well, let's say there is a legitimate, somebody wants to come and kill and what, and you had the, when the Japanese went after Pearl Harbor, they were talking about, you know, well, we'd go to the mainland, and Yamamoto goes, man, there'll be a rifle behind every blade of grass. I mean, it's like, you know, you don't want to do that. And there's, here in America, we have just hunting licenses outnumber all the armies in the world combined, just hunting licenses in America, and they're all snipers, you know, so I'm just like, I'm not that afraid. I mean, right off the bat, that doesn't make me afraid. I don't fear that. And I think the price would be way too high. I mean, hell, just ask the Afghanis. You know, Afghanistan, you know, bring your empire. You can come to die here, too. So, you know, whatever. So initially, that doesn't make me afraid because I know the history. But I understand how that can make people afraid. And I'm going, okay, so what would be best if we create this big government? And then it's the one that violates our rights. We have 160, 200 million, whatever, a lot of people killed by their own government in the last century. And I'm going, God, there's a lot of stats of this democide, you know, this death by your own government. Man, that's a stat. So I'm going, let's look at something else. Let's try something else. So they do the Declaration of Independence, and it was the purpose of government, defense of individual rights, not the collective, not the whatever, because they understood that was the best deal. Well, people signed on to it, cool. Then this decade later, you get the Constitution thing, and they create, and then, okay, we're only going to fund armies for 2 years, and then they perpetually fund it, and big giant debt of whatever, and oh, God, here we go again. So what we had to worry about became, in reality, the problem from our own armies. And the expense and all the things that you and I would rather do with our money, either as individuals or even collectively, is not there. It's gone. It's into some bombs they got to, you know, drop so because they're expired or something. So we can go down that road, and I can give you all the stats that you know, so fond of on how it didn't work with that example. But let's say there's a real threat. I always see that individual action and what they perceive to be their own self-interest, people will come together in voluntary, maybe even temporary alliances to go after wherever the danger is. Because when you got the big giant alien invasion from Alpha Sin, whatever the hell, you know, comes in, it's not going to be a government thing. It's going to be the people. And the attitude of that freedom, I think, makes them a much more dangerous foe. And for our empire to go in and think we're going to control a country like Iraq, and you got a bunch of 15-year-olds that know how to use cell phones and, you know, make bombs, I'm going, they don't have a chance. They never did. You know, so I'm not afraid the way you think I should be. I know that I can go further into that, but did that answer your question?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of different parts to deal with here. I mean, we have a lot of guns in America right now, sure, but a lot of that is due to the existence of these large corporations that to some extent can only exist because the government was there to either give them a jump start via subsidies or something, or to protect the right for them to exist by, you know, protecting our country and giving them a place to grow. You know, I don't know if we would have as many guns manufactured in the United States if we didn't have a single federal body that was doing trade agreements, you know, with other countries around the world. I don't know if we'd be in the same spot in terms of the production of firearms we have. I mean, that's kind of like one route to go down.
So production of firearms is a bad thing in and of itself.
I didn't say it was a bad thing. I'm just saying that in terms of there being a rifle behind every blade of grass in the United States, it's possible that we wouldn't have had so many rifles had we not had the ability to centralize some body that negotiates trade agreements that allows us to produce as many firearms as we have. Is one way to look at it. Another thing, the idea that people would just come together to form alliances, you know, in response to a threat. I mean, there's two huge issues with that. One, coming together to form that type of alliance probably wouldn't be able to happen, you know, instantly if there was a large threat to the south of the United States.
Nothing about the government is instant.
Yeah, well, sure. But like, let's say I'm using the United States example. It doesn't have to be Mexico. It could be any group of people. But like, let's say you got a group of people and another one is moving in. You might not have the time to spin up a whole war machine from a bunch of disjointed tribes, you know, in the matter of days or weeks or even months. The negotiations would be monumental. A lot of people might feel like they're not even... they don't even need to be involved. Maybe they think, well, those guys will just invade a little bit and they won't mess with us. The invading army could even take advantage of the disjointed group of people, and they could actually reach out to others inside that group of freedom-loving people and say, hey, we're not going to invade you as long as you don't join the resistance to fight against us when we move in and invade your other brothers. You know, there's so many different ways that a collective force that's working together could exert power over the disjointed people. I think this is like a fundamental, even economic analysis, that any large collective group of people has more power that it can exert, more leverage that it can exert over a disjointed body of people.
Well, that's the best reason for not doing it, you know. When you say these things, and I'm thinking it's like I start to recognize the cognitive dissonance. You know, there's like two competing ideas that can't exist together. So I look at it and I'm going, okay, you have now this collective, this group, this bunch of people that's going to make a decision for everybody and people on the other side of a border, and they tell Arizona, they're going, yeah, you're not allowed to have immigrants going living on the Mexico side and working on the U.S. side or vice versa. When I grew up in Arizona in the 70s, there was like no border. I mean, you know, people came here to work. They go back and forth. It was not a thing. You know, of course you had, hey, how many Mexicans are, you know, working for you, you know, or as if it mattered. It didn't, you know, now it's like, oh, we got to see your paperwork and so on. I'm going, you know, people offered their money for people's services and labor, and it just nobody cared. It was not a thing. Then it became a thing. So I'm looking at this collective as saying these people can't cross this border for whatever reason. They'll conjure up because we're being invaded, because, you know, they're taking all our services, because. And it sounds like you need more freedom, you know, freedom from them taking your stuff to give to somebody else. I mean, you know, I don't care, you know, if they're from Appalachia or Sonora, you know, I don't want them to take my stuff. Well, you go, yeah, but there has, well, then you're creating this entity that's on a border. So, I mean, are you looking for border control from that kind of invasion, or that invasion doesn't meet your criteria, or?
I wouldn't consider economic immigration. I wouldn't consider immigrants to come here to work. I wouldn't consider that an invasion. No, I'm not that.
Well, you got a majority. You got people that elected Trump that says, yes, it does. Now what?
Yeah,
there's
that's
your government.
True.
Now, you can see how I look at it. It's just maybe a little bit different. We'll be right back.
Sure.
From the fourth letter of Captain Mark. Landlubbers are conditioned to believe that the originators of an idea deserve exclusive rights to it, but these innovators are nothing but privateers, granted a monopoly by the crown. Potential inventors are restricted from using their own property and forced to navigate a wilderness of prohibited ideas. These patterned monopolies are intellectual colonization. This alliance of means between the crown and the privateers is not an alignment of ends. Both collude to establish a permission culture, in which everyone second-guesses their own thoughts, never sure which ideas are permissible to develop. But their objectives are different. The crown aims to cripple dissenting opinion, while privateers will only be satiated when all new ideas already fall under their monopoly. This scheme does not protect our information, but seizes it and denies us access. The future belongs to individuals who think, speak, and act freely to create and share without reservation. Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com.
Yeah, pirates. Yeah, you go there. The we have a book on Amazon, and then all the letters online, and that is a really good. You know, you'd be part of that conversation. That would be, you know, interesting. You go over there, but the pirate forums, we hadn't even really started, you know, monitoring it at all or anything, and that was another thing that we came up with as we go. How would we do this? Because you know we're going to get trolls. I mean, it's going to be a thing. So I'm going, you know, we don't want to censor any. I want that down to the individual. No collective determination of who can and can't. How do we do this? And what we came up with, and we're still working on it, is that everybody gets to post. Everybody's up there. Everybody, everything. Now, we could have Captain Mark's, you know, he doesn't a ban list or to the bilge or whatever. And I go, yeah, I'll take that list, make it, you know, easier for me to kind of. But I always have the option to turn on or off somebody in my feed. But it doesn't go away. It goes to the bilge. And we call them bilge rats. Okay. So let the build it. Let them troll, man. They can go, you know, knock themselves out. Because when you got time and you feel like it and you got nothing else to do, hell, I'm going to go to the bilge to have a conversation. Damnly. I guarantee that's going to be where it's a happening, you know. But when I'm talking about building the ship, our whole thing is, you know, actually building the space. It's a pirate ship. It's a spaceship. You go to PiratesWithoutBorders.com, and the upper left, you'll see, take the virtual tour, and you'll see, and there's a lot of people doing stuff. PiratesWithoutBorders.com. And each one of those categories, communication, energy, you know, health and food and water and all that, are the technology that's going to allow that down to the individual, the decentralization down to the individual of a lot of the tech on this stuff. So the idea that we don't stop any ideas, but we have the individual right of association or disassociation. We go, if I don't want to see this crap, boom, they go to the bilge, but it's still there. You see my point? It's just a way of us. I don't like collective decisions. And a lot of the people that associate with us on that, they don't either. Let everybody have their say. It's just, am I allowed to not care? That's what got Dobby and I in the big conversation. As I always ask, especially when it's Israel or something, I raise my hand up and I go, look, I just want to ask a question. Am I allowed to not care? And when it came to like gender roles and all this other stuff, it was, I go, I don't care. I thought that was the goal. It was for me not to care what you do in your bed. I don't care. We know you have to care. I go, why do I got to care? I thought that was the goal for me not to care. You know? So it's, you know, these are kind of things that are coming up. All right. We're coming back in about 10 seconds. Here we go.
Radio Network at LRN.FM.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
And don't forget, next hour, Doug Casey. Woo! International man. CaseyResearch.com. Yeah, gold. We're going to talk about that. We're talking with Stephen Bonnell II, a.k.a. Destiny Online. You can get his pontifications on twitch.tv/destiny. Really popular. Hundreds of thousands of people want to hear what he has to say. So I'm going, all right. We're talking about proper role of government. Should there even be a government? What is, you know, if there's going to be a government, do you have a proper role? Is there a limitation? Is there, or is it just majority, we say, or policy by somebody gets the most votes? How do you determine a proper role of government? Is it limited?
I mean, it really depends on your personal philosophy on why the government should exist. So some people believe that the government should exist just to cover the bare necessities, the bare number of rights needed for you to exist as a person that's not being invaded by another country or killed by a fellow neighbor. So they might say the government should only be there to have some sort of, say, police force, maybe to enforce like the most brutal of laws, you know, no murdering and stuff like that, and then an army to protect you from a foreign invasion. Other people, myself included, I would argue that the government should probably exist to ensure some minimum standard of living between its people so that the people in a given state can flourish as much as possible. But the government has a unique ability to do that because as a collective group of people, we can do things that individuals on their own really can't do.
You know, I remember it was, God, I can't remember, it was 88 or 90. It was when Hart, you know, ran, and it was, you know, monkey business. Now, he was a Democrat, you know, used to be a senator, whatever. And I remember in a debate, he said, government should do the things that individuals can't do, or don't want to do. And I'm going, why? I mean, at the time, I go, that sounds cool, you know, but I'm going, you know, sometimes as I got older, I started to realize that, you know, if individuals aren't doing it, probably because it shouldn't be done. I mean, you know, so what is it that the government should do that individuals can't or shouldn't or whatever? Give me some examples.
I mean, the go-to is probably arbitration, right? How do you resolve disputes between two parties? How do parties choose somebody that they both trust to do arbitration dispute?
Yeah.
And, you know, if you don't like the decision you get, who do you appeal that to? You know, if there's no state. I think that through trying to resolve disputes between two parties, you almost necessarily end up with some form of government there. Something's going to happen.
You know? This is a good point. And I remember, have you ever read any Heinlein or any science fiction or any of that stuff? You know, it's kind of, you know, libertarians are heavy into a lot of science fiction because, you know, they take these kind of questions and they extrapolate it in, you know, the universe, you know, without, you know, restrictions on different things. They have mm-hmm. some weird circumstances and whatever. And, you have a moon is a harsh mistress. You have like Australia was a penal colony. Well, now the moon's a penal colony, but they can't come back, you know, to the earth because they're used to the gravity. So they stay there. And then they have marriages that are line marriages and polygamist and this and that and how they do their adjudication of problems. And, you know, so you get a lot of different things. The one thing that there was a libertarian candidate for president in 2000 one time, and he had his whole thing was 1-800, whatever the heck the number was. And he was advocating for one thing. And he's going, you can't have a justice system that is funded by force, by a gun to the head to do it. And he goes, so what if every contract you want enforced, every contract signed, that's what funds the court system. It's voluntarily. If you do a car rental agreement, the value of the contract is, say, $500. Well, it's going to be a certain percentage for the government to enforce that contract. You can say, nope, we're going to do, you know, binding private arbitration, or we're going to do this. Nah, I think I'll pay my, you know, $6.73 to, if you guys piss me off, I'm going to use the court system of the government and I'm going to pay, and that's the fee right here. That pays for it. It's not, you know, coercive. It doesn't make me. It's voluntary. So the thing is that from the beginning, can you have a court system? Can you have government that is voluntary, that you get the service that you're paying for? That if you operate from that premise, from that, I'm not against government. I'm just against coercive government. And as soon as you can show me one that's not coercive, I'm in, you know? So I'm just looking for how can we have non-coercive government? That is my first question, not what I might need a government for and try and justify its existence. If there is a need for it, I'm going, okay, let's see if we can do that without force. So that's the difference, I think, between, you know, you and I, is that I go one step deeper, and whatever requirement I have for there to be a government, yeah, we can probably come up with something, but it can't be coercive, because then whatever reason you're creating it, you're making it worse, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, we can agree that all forms of coercion aren't necessarily bad, right? Or do we think that coercion is necessarily bad in and of itself?
If you got to force somebody to do something, you're going down the dark side. It's kind of like mandatory vaccinations. I'm not like pro or anti-vaccine, but when I got the crown says, we're going to take this and you don't know what's in this vial, we haven't tested it, and give us your baby and we're going to stick them because, you know, we have this chart over here. And I'm going, no, no, no.
Well, so for instance, let's look at a justice system. So we talked about how, like, you know, do we really need a justice system that's backed by force? If there's no force, you don't have a justice system, right? If two people are having a dispute relating to their land, and then you go to some arbitration, and the arbitration says you're not to do this, that's the ruling of the court.
Well, no, I'm saying the funding of that. I mean, it starts off bad. I hadn't even done anything, and it's already bad.
Well, the problem is there's no other real way to fund this thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
you know, the value of the contract. You know, whatever the dispute is. Now, you're talking about criminal, but, you know, this civil function of it could fund the criminal courts. And then you got all these laws of crap. Everybody's got a policy of what they want is what's clogged it up, you know, with nonviolent crimes. You know, freaking as a libertarian, and we're screaming, doing away with the drug war 20 years ago, and everybody thinks you're freaking nuts for even bringing it up. How nuts are we now? You know, so I just, it changes this policy thing. It's always about, you know, the sway of the majority as opposed to the rights of the individual. I don't think it works that way, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, like in terms of having a cost associated with things, like I don't even know how would we begin to work that out? Say, for instance, somebody owns a lucrative piece of private property and there's a whole bunch of people that just want to trespass on the property all the time. What is the guy supposed to pay a fee to the court for every single individual person that tries to trespass on said property? Or how would that even look in practice?
What are you saying? You mean like the court enforcing no trespass, or they put up a cop there or something? I mean, what are you talking about?
Well, I don't understand how you can I guess I don't understand how you have like a court system without enforcement measures in place, or what you mean by no.
No. I wasn't even talking about the enforcement part. You know, I was just talking about you haven't even enforced anything day one. You just have a court and you go, we built it on blood money from everybody. We're just. It's a justice system that we stole from you to create. I mean, you haven't even done anything and you're already a bad guy, you know? So I'm going to, if you're unjustly creating a justice system, don't BS me and call it a justice system.
Sure. So I guess we have to go back to that. In the very beginning of the show, you brought up something about deontology versus consequentialism, utilitarianism. Mm-hmm. So I'm very much an ends guy. So if we have two different systems, one requires a bit of coercion to get off the ground in the form of, say, taxation, which is something you might hate. Yeah. If that system produces far better outcomes than a system where there's no arbitration, then I would say, well, okay, well, we can have coercion a little bit here, and it's justified because the result that it delivers for everybody involved is superior than not having it at all, not having any arbitration at all.
And I'm saying we have enough evidence the second you start any coercively funded anything, a government, it always turns out bad. And I'm just, you know, the healthcare thing is that if I want to have Doogie Howser, you know, do brain surgery on me at 16 for chickens, should I be allowed to? You know, and the way it is now, no, you're not. You know, we got licensees and they got, you know, limits on how many doctors there can be, so they make enough money. Blah, 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 blah. I'm like, whoa, time out. Man, give me which doctor, what's his face? You know, have me lick a rock or suck on a toad or something and I'm cured. We don't even have these options. I'm saying the entire governmental system, because it was based on force, because it protects monopolies, because it's there for the people that are already, all the people that you would argue against, I'm saying the reason you have them is because of government, because at the very core of it, it's coercive. It's not just from the beginning. Now, can there be government? Hell yeah. It's called families. I mean, you know, that's why teenagers want to leave. I don't want to be under your house rules. I'm going to do my own. Peace out. You know, that's how we raise you. Go do your own thing. But no, it's like everybody's got to have a daddy. And I'm going, it doesn't work. And I'm thinking it's trending, you know, pretty much our way. I think the evidence and with the communication of the internet, it's getting to the point where people understand, yeah, there may be other options. We got a little bit more time to talk after the break. But it's an opinion here. I think that's where we're at. What do you think?
I mean, obviously, I would disagree. I would say that the state is very necessary, and I think the evidence is stacked against people that are just, loosely unified tribes in terms of historical evidence. You know, Native American tribes lost to a small degree of invaders. Napoleon was able to make a lot of progress across Europe because of the disjointedness of the people across Europe. Germany in World War II, the Blitzkrieg was incredibly effective against all the nations. Even other nations couldn't come together to respond in time. I mean, the Soviet Civil War against the white armed forces or whatever the that all came together. Like, it seems like you can't.
Well, that's why Marvin the Martian, that had the one button I get everybody, was excommunicated from his society. The state doesn't want the power in the hands of one individual.
The political world is a med.
Where I'm like, you know, that's where the arguments come. Yeah, should my homeowners association allow me to have a thermonuclear weapon in my garage? You know, mm-hmm. I'm going, well, where did the government get that power? If it wasn't derived from the ability of the people to do it, then where did they get the power from? They're just some guy in charge up top saying, you know, we rule you. And I'm going, whoa. Where did you get this money? Where did you get this power to even have it? Or now you're going to say I can't, you know?
A homeowners association could be seen as like, that could be the natural outcome of not having a government. Right? Where maybe there's a collection of property that's owned and they'll only sell it to people that will adhere to some type of a binding agreement.
But they won't allow that. That happened. It was called Prosperity Zones about 3 years ago. They tried to pass at a square mile area out in the freaking desert of Arizona. And it was, look, this is how they approached the government. This was the deal. They had little ad hoc hearings we go to and all that kind of stuff. And I thought it was interesting. It was a, I don't know, Koch brother thing, but, you know, whatever you think of them, I got my issues. But what happens is they're just using liberty as a suitcase of influence to get what they want, you know, for whatever. But they have this, it was a rich guy from Argentina, and, you know, the government there went bad, so he's like, ah, screw this, I got to find freedom somewhere. May I go buy it? You know, here's $40 million, let's go see if we can buy some legislation. So what it was is he goes, you know, if I'm out in the middle of the desert, and you look at the tax rolls and the government go, look, you're out middle of nothing here. There's no infrastructure. There's no roads and you're not making any tax money. I said, I tell you what, we will pay you whatever tax money you get on this for, I don't know, 10 years worth, 20 years worth, where it's nothing you're getting anyway. You're going to have this great prosperity and economic activity because we don't have you to deal with. And in this square mile, we're going to build wealth. We're going to be stinking, filthy, stinking rich and have jobs and people and live and philosophy of leave me aloneism. And what do you care? You weren't making any money on it anyway. We're going to do this. And they're going, okay, you know, we'll do. So they're starting to define it. Well, then what happens? Oh, here comes the government. Oh, hell no. They don't want competition. They want to be the protected monopoly. There is no way that we're going to allow you to demonstrate this prosperity zone of how much is going to be done when we're out of the way. That ain't going to happen. So we don't really have the freedom you're talking about. And we're always up against the collective interest of a government. And they do have the big giant armies of you're not allowed. That is the problem. They're not there for me. They're there for them.
Sure. Okay.
I mean, there's a lot of opportunity. See, that's one thing. When I'm on Air America, I'd have this conversation constantly. I loved it, just like you love it. You know, it's like, you know, let's talk about it. And that's why I wanted to talk to you, as if I could get a splinter in your mind just a little bit of freedom's the answer, what's the question? Well, no, it's not. We really need to have a collective. We built the business and it wasn't used, and we kind of all together in the village of raising your kid or something. And I'm going, you know, to what end? What is it we want? Happy, healthy, you know, prosperous, inspired individuals that want to, you know, get up every morning and go, and it's an exciting day, and they're healthy and they're not worried about getting invaded by whatever the hell. And I'm going, yeah, of course that's what I want. How best to get there? And I just wanted to insert the concept as if you make freedom and non-coercion and not stealing from me the foundation, then you can be creative in how you fund it. You can be creative in what you're offering. Be creative. And I even go, I'm running for office, Congress or something. They take me down. I've run for Congress 3 times. I ran against John McCain for U.S. Senate. I've run for Secretary of State 2 times, knowing that election fraud was a big thing with the computers in 94 and 06 and got proven right. Blah, 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 blah. I've run for state legislator, county recorder. I mean, I've been here. Man, we have these conversations. Trust me, I've been through a lot of them. And I know what to say when we go to the newspaper editorial boards, and they'll go, well, what about, and they say the same things that you do, but what about the invasion of this and that and environmental of whatever? And I go, I'm willing to sell the Grand Canyon to the Sierra Club, and they do whatever the hell they want with it. Or if I got billboards on the North Wall, you know, and the world's longest bungee jump hotel on the South Rim, and I get freedom for that, boom, put up, you know, start spray painting the North Wall, because that is a small price to pay for freedom that I think would be so much better. Well, of course, then they, I want to get on Flying Die Airlines, and you give me my 9mm because I forgot mine when I left home. I mean, you know, real controversial things like that. Do I have the freedom to make these kinds of decisions? Of course not. You go, we got a collective that says, and you have to, and you can't, and always. And I'm going, see that, and they don't, they think by printing these kinds of things that it makes me look crazy. And I'm going, no, it demonstrates freedom, what extreme I'm willing to have to be free, and that is really probably not going to happen, but, you know, just the possibility of that scares them. And I'm going, wow, man, this is, so this discussion is exactly the discussion I like having, so that we can start to explore other opportunities for funding, other ways to achieve the same goal, because I think you and I have the same goal, healthy, happy individuals that get along together and aren't fearful all the time. And I don't see government feeds on fear, and I don't like it.
I mean, you could argue that anything feeds on fear depending on how you phrase the argument, right? Like, I could argue that an anarcho, anybody, is also feeding on fear by perpetuating a fear of the government or a fear of a lack of choice or a fear of a...
Well, I'll give you a bunch of stats on that one.
Sure. How long do we have?
We're done. I got my next guest coming in like 2 minutes. Okay. But I wanted to, thank you for doing this. I'm glad you did it. And hopefully, you and I can have a conversation. If you got something that you're going, oh, yeah, I want to get Ernie on this one. What about this? And I go, bring it on, man. Let's do it. Because I love having this discussion. And I appreciate you coming on because I think what you do is very powerful. And I think the end goal and what you want, we're not so far apart. It's just an opinion on how to get there.
Sure. Could I ask you a quick question? I'm curious.
Sure.
This would be like what I'd be interested in hearing your answer to. Let's say that there was the existence of a disease that would kill half a population. Mm-hmm. If an entire population, we'll pretend there's a vaccine, nothing weird in it, but it would protect it. Let's say that if the people were left to their own devices, not everybody got it. Let's say the disease kills half the population, or the government could coercively say, listen, you just have to get this vaccine. In one world, half the population dies. In the other world, the entire population, save for a few vulnerable people, are protected. Which outcome do you think is preferable there? The one where the people had the more freedom and then half of them died, or the one where they were coerced into getting the vaccine and all of the people survived, or the majority of them?
You know, when in a situation like that, there's a good example, Tom Clancy in the book, executive orders or something like that. That mm-hmm. is exactly what happened. There was a big pandemic and the president, Jack Ryan comes out and we're going to make everybody. But his solution was, I was obviously unconstitutional. I should be impeached. I'm resigning. He took, responsibility for what he did wrong because he thought the outcome was worth it and he was going to take responsibility for it. In those kinds of situations, but government never takes responsibility for their decision because if they made the wrong decision or more people died from whatever, nobody's responsible. That's one thing. I hate the idea that they're going to use this kind of force and they're not responsible. So I wish I had more time to talk about it. Sure. I definitely would. Hey, thanks very much for coming on, man. This is awesome.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye-bye.